What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In stone cold panic is how my NPR colleague Maura Liasson described the state of Republican leadership over the weekend, watching the steamroller of Donald Trump. On the brink of Super Tuesday, a few have endorsed him. Chris Christie, Jeff Sessions, and a lot of votes have gone his way, but many others are in dismay, saying Trump isn't a conservative, isn't a Republican, will destroy the party. This hour on Point, on the eve of Super Tuesday, Donald Trump and the GOP. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Republicans, can Donald Trump carry your flag? Is he your guy? Can he, should he be stopped? Can he win in November? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Over the weekend, at last week's GOP debate, I should say, Trump said, look, I am building a bigger Republican Party.
New people are coming into the Republican Party. We are building a new Republican Party. A lot of new people are coming in.
But for months now, leading Republicans have said this is not conservatism. Here was Speaker of the House Paul Ryan.
This is not conservatism. What was proposed yesterday is not what this party stands for. And more importantly, it's not what this country stands for.
And last week, Arkansas Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson here saying Donald Trump's discussion of big issues, not serious.
The words are frightening. How you're going to build a wall, how you're going to have Mexico pay for it. What does this mean? Let's be realistic in our discussions and how we discuss these issues with the American people.
And Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, very colorful last week at the Press Club Foundation dinner. My party is going bleep crazy, he said.
My party is going bat crazy.
Bat bleep crazy. Joining us from Washington is Alex Eisenstadt, politics reporter for Politico. Alex, welcome to On Point.
Hi there.
It's great to have you here. So you've been looking at the numbers. Your headline is GOP wakes up to a Trump nightmare. What's the nightmare, Alex?
Well, the nightmare is that we're now on, you know, one day away from Super Tuesday. Votes are about to be cast in a number of different contests across the country. And it's very hard to stop. It's now looking increasingly hard to stop Trump. And the question is, among a lot of people in the party, is it too late to stop him? What can be done? And if he is a nominee, what are the party's prospects in November and potentially beyond? There's a lot of people who are talking about the party sort of tearing itself apart now because it's so bitterly divided over this.
Why would Donald Trump be a catalyst to party destruction, GOP destruction?
Well, the reason why is because you really have two sets of people in the party right now who disagree bitterly on this question. One are the people who support Trump and believe that he's taking the party in a direction that they like and they want, that they find refreshing. Then there's another group of people who find his rhetoric obscene, and they think he's destroying the party, not just in terms of its image, but also in terms of his principles, that he's not really going to lead the party in a terribly conservative direction, that he hasn't laid out a platform that aligns with typical Republican principles.
And the numbers, when you look at Super Tuesday and beyond, is there a scenario in which this is over tomorrow night?
This will not be over tomorrow night, in large part because of the way the Republican Party has allocated delegates and the way in which the process worked itself out. So 25% of the Republican Party's delegates are going to be awarded on Super Tuesday, but those delegates in each state are awarded proportionately. So in other words, you're likely to have Trump emerge from the night. In fact, you're almost certain to have Trump emerge from the night with the greatest number of delegates. But because delegates are awarded proportionately and not winner take all, you will have other candidates also pick up delegates. Now, a far more significant night, perhaps more significant, I should say, than Super Tuesday, March 1st, is March 15th. And that's because you have a number of states that are going to be on the ballot that award their delegates winner-take-all. Florida, Ohio, Illinois, several others. And so those states are big because if Trump wins those states, and no matter what margin he wins by, whether it's by 2% or by 20%, he will win all of those states' delegates. And so that, for that reason, it's possible that, you know, March 15th is going to be a day where a candidate, perhaps Trump, comes much closer to clinching the party's nomination.
Here's Marco Rubio talking with Face the Nation's John Dickerson yesterday, saying, look, this is a, he's been saying con man in recent days about Donald Trump, and he's not, he says, a Republican, not a conservative.
Donald Trump's not a Republican. Donald Trump's not a conservative. Donald Trump is trying to pull off the biggest scam in American political history, basically a con job where he's trying to take over the Republican Party by telling people he's someone who he's not.
Alex Eisenstadt, there's a lot of talk here about freak out, about panic. Do you see the evidence of that in the GOP?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, in part, some of it is manifested in the way Marco Rubio started talking about this race. Just a couple of weeks ago, or just a couple of days ago, early last week, Rubio wasn't even mentioning Trump's name. Now you have Rubio launching attacks on Trump in nearly every single breath. Increasingly, you see a lot of big donors and players in Republican money circles who are talking about spending money against Trump, which is something that hadn't been talked about really that much several months ago. So now the question is that while now the party is talking more about this, and as the prospect of a Trump nomination becomes increasingly real, the problem is that all this may be too little too late. You know, there's a poll out today showing Trump at around 50% nationally in a new CNN poll. He has more than three times the amount of support that Marco Rubio has. So really, you have a race that right now doesn't seem all that close.
And Trump way right out front. Here's Virginia Republican Congressman Scott Riegel, Rubio supporter, attacking Donald Trump on NPR on Saturday.
I cannot stand next to Donald Trump and campaign for him. Now, I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I can't do that. But I can't in good conscience stand beside Donald Trump. He is the antithesis of what I think we need to be as a Republican Party. His values don't align. Our country will be less safe, not more safe, with him as commander-in-chief. He does not have the temperament, in my view.
Alex Eisenstadt with Politico just got half a minute with you. Is there a strategy to take Trump out of this race? Is there a coordinated effort underway or not?
Well, it's not necessarily coordinated, but you do have a lot of people in the Republican Party establishment talking about ways to defeat him, and whether it's too late, and if it's not too late, what still can be done. Now, the interesting thing about the remarks that you just ran there from Congressman Riegel is that this is the way a lot of people in the party are talking about Trump. They're saying that they can't support him. They're saying that if he's the nominee, that they won't necessarily support Hillary Clinton, but that they won't necessarily vote for Donald Trump. So if Trump is the nominee, this is a big debate that is going to be potentially tearing apart the Republican Party throughout the summer and throughout the fall. Will members of the party vote for him? Will they stand beside him at the convention? Will they support him?
There's the giant question
that will be had.
Alex Eisenstadt with Politico, thanks so much for joining us. We're talking about the big Republican freakout over Donald Trump. I talked earlier today with South Carolina Congressman, former Governor Mark Sanford, Cruz supporter. He's called Donald Trump's role in this campaign dangerous and destructive. I asked him if Trump meant danger to the party, to the country, and how.
You can't call people some of the things that he has without it having a negative effect, whether that is in politics itself or in the way that, you know, kids think it's acceptable or not acceptable to talk to each other.
Is Donald Trump a conservative by your lights?
We don't know. I mean, I don't think that conservatism is defined simply where you are on immigration. I think it is a much broader swath of thinking, and so I'll go back again to one of the basic tenets, I think, of conservatism is approaching the way you spend in real terms. And to completely disregard numbers and to step on, off into fantasy land and say, well, we're gonna get the budget right by waste, fraud, and abuse, doesn't seem to me or strike me as particularly conservative.
If he should ultimately take the GOP nomination, he's done well so far. Do you believe he can win in the general election in the fall?
He very well might, which is why I thought it was important before the candidates left South Carolina to at least drive my own stake in the ground and say, this is what I believe and this is where I think he's wrong.
What would that mean for the Republican Party if you had Donald Trump as a president, putatively, nominally a Republican, but with his positions and his approach?
It would mean, I think, a couple of different things. I think it would mean some level of redefinition as to what the party is about, in that, you know, presidents become, in essence, titular heads of their party, whether it's, again, Republican or Democrat. I think that, you know, for the party of, quote, family values, it would be a bit of a stretch to again, use some of the language he's used thus far in the campaign, or maybe tone it down afterward. I think it would suggest a move toward economic populism that I think is dangerous. I think that there would be down ballot implications. I know that, you know, some of the folks that are in marginal districts are already talking about it. You know, when everybody's abuzz in Washington with what comes next, and in the cloakroom off the floor of the House, people are back there waiting on a vote, and one of the things they're talking about is, what's it mean for my election? And there has been a level of concern, because the idea of having to defend the next crazy thing he says isn't something that people relish.
Would you vote for Donald Trump in the general election?
You know, I am a Republican, and therefore, in the final analysis, I believe that I would support our nominee. That's where I've always ended up. But this one would be a particularly tough pill to swallow, and so I'd have to assess that and see where things were when we got there.
Do you think he can be stopped?
I don't believe so. I think that, you know, by the middle of March, we'll have a very strong feel for what comes next in the Republican Party. And there are two schools of thought. Some people say, well, at that point, if he wins the nomination, he gives it to Hillary. But there's another school of thought that says, given the way he has defied political gravity thus far, that there's no stopping him. And we'll see come November.
Congressman, former Governor Mark Sanford of South Carolina, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the GOP in something like a panic right now over Donald Trump. Stone cold panic, says my NPR colleague Maura Liasson. Not all Republicans, obviously. Look at the map of votes so far. Look at the polling numbers coming for Super Tuesday and beyond. But the party core, many conservatives at this point, kind of freaking out over Trump. You can join us this hour. Republicans, where do you stand on Mr. Trump? Are you embracing him? Do you see him as a wrecking ball? Is Donald Trump a conservative? Is he a Republican by traditional standards? Do those standards matter? Chris Christie out late last week endorsing Donald Trump. That really sent shockwaves around. Then just yesterday, Jeff Sessions, Republican senator from Alabama, endorsing Donald Trump.
I am pleased to endorse Donald Trump for the presidency of the United States. I believe that we on a movement is afoot that must not fade away. It has the potential to have the American people's voices heard for change.
A movement that must not fade away. That would be the Donald Trump movement. But then there was just controversy after controversy. The language getting very rough on all sides over the weekend. We're talking about pants wetting and all the rest. And then on Sunday, late last week, there was this endorsement by David Duke, white supremacist, on CNN State of the Union. Jake Tapper asked Donald Trump if he would like to condemn David Duke and his endorsement.
Will you unequivocally condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or that of other white supremacists in this election?
Well, just so you understand, I don't know anything about David Duke, okay? I don't know anything about what you're even talking about with white supremacy or white supremacists. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Did he endorse me or what's going on? Because, you know, I know nothing about David Duke. I know nothing about white supremacists. And so you're asking me a question that I'm supposed to be talking about people that I know nothing about.
Now, Trump has come out and said, I disavow this endorsement. I couldn't hear well in that interview, and I disavow this. But to many, it's a little too late. Over the weekend, already, we had heard Virginia Republican Congressman, this is Scott Riegel again, a Rubio supporter. Let's be clear about that. But he was attacking Donald Trump very broadly on NPR on Saturday night.
See, the bravado with which he talks and this gunslinger approach with which he approaches foreign policy, yet he can't back it up with any logic or consecutive linear thinking on foreign policy, it's reckless. I truly believe that it's reckless, and I couldn't advance that and live with myself.
We're going to hear in a few minutes from a Trump supporter, A.J. Delgado, but first, Matt Lewis is with us, not a Trump supporter. Senior contributor at the Daily Caller, CNN political commentator, contributing editor at The Week, host the podcast Matt Lewis and the News, author of Too Dumb to Fail, How the GOP Betrayed the Reagan Revolution to Win Elections and How It Can Reclaim Its Conservative Roots, with us from Washington. Matt, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What do you see unfolding in the primary victories so far of Donald Trump and the anticipated victories tomorrow, Super Tuesday?
Well, I think it's a time for choosing. I mean, if you want to talk about potential redefining the Republican Party and the conservative movement, we're on the cusp of that. And you can really imagine two very distinct and different futures. If the Republican Party becomes, let's say, the party of Marco Rubio, and we saw in South Carolina, he was endorsed by Tim Scott, an African-American Republican, Nikki Haley, the Indian-American female Republican governor of South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Marco Rubio, I think that would be a conservatism that's solutions-oriented, optimistic, 21st-century conservatism. On the other hand, it appears more likely we're going the direction of Donald Trump, which I think is white identity politics, economic populism, nationalism, and I think in the long run, the wrong direction for the Republican Party.
Help us understand your politics, your political philosophy. Matt, where are you on the spectrum? A liberal, conservative, Republican, et cetera?
No, I'm a very conservative person. You know, I started off listening to Rush Limbaugh around 1988. And I'm basically what you would consider to be a Ronald Reagan conservative. But, you know, in writing my book, Too Dumb to Fail, I sort of document conservatism going back to Aristotle through Edmund Burke and up to William F. Buckley and Ronald Reagan. And that's the style of conservatism that I espouse. And I think that what Donald Trump is proposing is very different. It's populism. It's nationalism. It's not conservatism. This is a guy who, you know, basically wants to subsidize Planned Parenthood, supports eminent domain, supports single-payer health care. The notion that he's conservative is really absurd.
If he were elected the nominee, what would the implications be for the Republican Party?
Well, you know, again, I think that, you know, the nominee becomes the titular head of the party. And I think it would redefine what it means to be a conservative. And you would have a guy at the top of the party who refused three or four times to denounce the Ku Klux Klan. You would have a guy at the top of the party who has made fun of Mexicans, POWs, women, including Megyn Kelly, disabled journalists. You'd have a guy at the top of the ticket who basically wants to change the First Amendment so you can go after news outlets that are too hard on him. I think that it would be catastrophic, and I think it would be a bridge too far. We see a lot of conservatives like Ben Sasse, the senator from Nebraska, today saying he couldn't support Trump, that he would certainly couldn't support Hillary Clinton, but he would have to write in the name or support a third-party constitutional conservative. That's probably where I would be were he the nominee.
That is just pretty amazing. It wasn't that long ago where the top of the GOP wasn't that worried about it.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I wrote this book, Too Dumb to Fail. When you write a book, you don't write it overnight. It takes, you know, years to write a book. I definitely saw the rise of the dumbing down of conservatism, this sort of anti-intellectual populist strain. I saw that coming a mile away, and that's why I wrote the book. I did not, however, I anticipated, and I certainly underestimated Donald Trump's ability to become the vessel for that nationalistic viewpoint.
You know, there are Republicans now that are breaking toward him, though, for him, including some very, very prominent ones. On Friday, Republican New Jersey Governor Chris Christie endorsing Donald Trump, standing right at his side. Here was Christie.
And there is no one who is better prepared to provide America with the strong leadership that it needs, both at home and around the world, than Donald Trump. He is, looking at the five people on that stage last night, the clear standout and the person who will do exactly what needs to be done to make America a leader around the world again. He'll provide strong, unequivocal leadership.
Matt Lewis, he'll provide strong, unequivocal leadership, says Chris Christie. And what's wrong with that?
Well, there are a lot of people throughout history who've provided strong leadership, who haven't necessarily provided leadership in the right direction. Look, I think Chris Christie is an opportunist. You know, Eric Erickson, the conservative blogger and talk radio host, has pointed out that a lot of the endorsements that we're seeing now coming for Donald Trump appear to be from people whose political careers are over. And I think that that certainly fits Chris Christie. I also found it quite interesting that on the day that Donald Trump refused to denounce David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan, he rolls out the endorsement of Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. I mean, you know, the optics of that are just unbelievable. Again, I don't think it hurts him in this, you know, certainly not in the SEC primary.
He's headed into this Super Tuesday. It's a Southern election. There's a Southern
exactly.
senator.
But there will come a day of reckoning, I think.
A couple of calls, and we'll bring in A.J. Delgado, Ed in Lexington, Kentucky. Ed, you're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Hello. I think, as a lifelong Republican, third-generation Republican,
okay.
that Trump has stepped into a vacuum in my party. You talk about a chaos in the party. I don't know what my party stands for anymore. What is the definition of a Republican? There isn't much in the way of principles other than true conservative religious beliefs, family values. But in terms of really being a party, I struggle if somebody said to me, what does the Republican Party stand for today? All I can say is, and believe me, I'm a Republican. I have contributed to the party, that we're against it. We're a bit against Obamacare. We're against this. We're against that. But what do we really stand for? And that's what's happened with Trump. Now, believe me,
yep.
I am very concerned, and I don't think I can vote for Trump. I think the man is childish. I'm embarrassed by the debates. I don't think he can do what he says he's going to do because he's got to get the support of the Congress to do it. But I understand how he has rallied the people around him because he's talking about doing something about our problems.
But Ed, how can you say there's a GOP vacuum? The GOP has taken over the great majority of state houses in this country. They've got both houses of Congress. They did very well in the midterms. That doesn't sound like flat on its back GOP.
But what have they accomplished besides getting elected? And that's unfortunately, that's what the party stands for, is getting elected, not actually doing something. You know, they want to get rid of Obamacare. 35 votes against Obamacare in the House. Not accomplished nothing. But what is their plan if they get rid of Obamacare?
Ed, we've got it. Ed, let me get one more if I may, Ed, and I appreciate your call from Lexington. One right here from Nashville, Tennessee. Davian. Davian, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I second your previous caller. The GOP, with all due respect to your guest, they're speaking to a time that is gone by. Their philosophy and their mindset is basically let's remain in power, and that's what it is. They're looking. He uses the word anti-intellectual when in reality it's anti-elitist.
Wait a minute, David. Are you for Trump or against Trump, David?
I'm a 39-year-old black man who's definitely voting for Trump. I mean, Trump is the antithesis of what the Republican Party is. The Republican Party is a weak party that has no spine, no backbone. If you look at what's happening in Europe right now with the widespread, what he calls populism, it's basically people standing up and saying that, you know, this is our country, and this is what we would like to see. We keep hearing about leadership, and it's not really about leadership. It's about representation. When you send someone to Washington, you don't want them to lead you. You want them to represent you. And the Republican Party, that is as it exists now, is there to try to lead people. They don't want to represent what their constituents are saying. And basically what he's saying is, when they talk about Trump, they're basically degrading the people who are voting for Trump, and that is the American people.
So you're solid for Donald Trump. You're a 39-year-old black man. What about when he appeared to hesitate on stepping away from David Duke and the white supremacist crowd? Now, he's come back the other way, but what about that?
Tom, with all due respect, do I really believe that Donald Trump is craving the endorsement of David Duke? I mean, I really believe him when he says, who is David Duke? Because if you ask me right now, of course I know who David Duke is, but in this day and age, in the year 2016, David Duke, come on, seriously, give me a break. Anybody can come out and say anything.
You know, Donald Trump might have been born at night, but he wasn't born last night. You know, David Duke is not an unknown character here.
But what I'm saying about that, though, is, Tom, nobody is actually taking the endorsement of David Duke seriously other than the people who want to use that to club Donald Trump over the head.
Davian, we've got it. That you're loud and clear, and you're a 39-year-old black Trump supporter for Nashville and solid for it. Matt Lewis, please stand by there in Washington. With us right now from Coral Gables, Florida, is A.J. Delgado, Trump supporter, conservative columnist whose work has appeared in the American Conservative, National Review, Breitbart, Daily Caller, where Matt Lewis also contributes as well, and more. A.J. Delgado, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Tom, thanks for having me.
So I've got just headlines spread all over the table in front of me, and they're all about Republican freakout over your guy, Donald Trump. Is Republican leadership right to be in something like a panic over Mr. Trump?
Oh, of course they are. We're going to see a landslide on Super Tuesday. Probably will win Florida on the 15th, and then it'll be all but official that he's the lock for the nomination. And they are right to freak out, because what we're seeing with Trump isn't really so much a candidacy as it is a movement. There is this overthrowing of the donor-owned political class of the establishment that has continuously sold us out on amnesty, on trade, on foreign policy, and it threatens their very existence. So they are right to freak out.
You know, there are very, very tough assessments of Mr. Trump, on the other hand. I'm looking at Robert Kagan here, big neocon, who says, you know, Trump is the GOP's Frankenstein monster, headline on his piece in the Washington Post. Now he's strong enough to destroy the party. He says a plague is descending on the party in the form of the most successful demagogue charlatan in the history of U.S. politics. What do you make of that critique? There's a lot of that out there now, AJ.
Oh, plague. I love the hysteria. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. It's a neoconservative. They're the ones that are most threatened because Trump, and one of the things we like about him, is he has a realist foreign policy. He has a strong belief in defending the U.S. and in using our military, but only when our interests actually are threatened. We've seen that with his comments in Iraq being a mistake, etc. So the people that are most having a mental breakdown over this are the neoconservatives that are so eager, such as Marco Rubio, to get us involved in as many wars, it seems, as possible. We'd at least be in two new ones if we have Rubio in office. So thank God we have a man like Donald Trump that doesn't want to send Billy from Arkansas away to fight and die in yet another pointless war in the Middle East.
AJ, does the GOP hold together if Trump is its candidate or president of the United States? Or is it something that's going to change form, fall down, have to be rebuilt if Trump is at the helm?
I think it'll be reborn as something different. The GOP would still be the GOP. It would be broader, stronger, but definitely something with more of a nationalistic populist bent versus the globalist establishment crony bent that it's had in the past few decades. So reborn, I would say, rather than destroyed. A phoenix from the ashes, maybe.
Matt Lewis, what do you see coming if it's Donald Trump for the party? Does it hang together? Can you have a president who many Republicans disavow?
I think that
a Republican president, they've disavowed Democratic presidency, I guess.
I think you could see an unraveling. I mean, political coalitions don't stay together forever. And the Republican Party was really held together by the Soviet Union, believe it or not. It was this existential threat which kept fiscal conservatives, social conservatives, and national security conservatives in one tent, so to speak. Obviously, that's gone, and we could see an unraveling because these are now really strange bedfellows. And the person who believes in, you know, an opportunity society and free markets and that more people equals more ideas and more prosperity has a really hard time in a populist party that wants tariffs and doesn't want to fix entitlements, wants to let Social Security just go as it is and not address it. So really, these are you have people now in this party who it's almost incompatible or inconceivable that they could stay together. I think it's entirely possible that there could be a sort of a coming apart moment.
Do you think, AJ, that a President Donald Trump could be as isolated, alienated from a Republican-dominated Congress as President Obama has been?
That remains to be seen how well he would navigate the legislative process. I don't believe so. I think he does have excellent deal-making skills. I think he's a man that would reach across the aisle and be able to work with others. So that would remain to be seen. We're unsure as far as what he would propose, what kind of a Congress would be in place during his presidency to see what he would be able to get through.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Republican Party in something like panic over Donald Trump. Not all Republicans, that is clear. He has won many primary votes already across the country and appears posed to win many more. But the party core, many conservatives, freaking out right now very publicly over Trump. Aja Delgado is not among them. She's a Trump supporter, joins us today from Coral Gables, Florida, conservative columnist. Matt Lewis, conservative writer as well, the Daily Caller, like AJ and more. He's author of the new book, Too Dumb to Fail, How the GOP Betrayed the Reagan Revolution to Win Elections and How It Can Reclaim Its Conservative Roots. You can join us this hour. How do you explain the rise of Donald Trump? Did the GOP create him with shock jock rhetoric, with racial wedge strategies, with dithering? Will he crack the party? Has he already? Will the GOP bosses go after him at the convention somehow? Take him down there. Are you imagining a President Trump? Last month, South Carolina Nikki Haley, Governor Nikki Haley, delivered the Republican response to the State of the Union, implored Americans to resist the temptation to oppose immigrants out of fear, a reference to Donald Trump.
Today, we live in a time of threats like few others in recent memory. During anxious times, it can be tempting to follow the siren call of the angriest voices. We must resist that temptation.
Trump can go to mockery and more when things get tough, but he's not the only one. Now, on Sunday in Salem, Virginia, Florida Senator Republican candidate Marco Rubio got into a kind of Trumpian language to attack the Donald.
He's always calling me Little Marco. And I'll admit, the guy, he's taller than me. He's like 6'2", which is why I don't understand why his hands are the size of someone who's 5'2". Have you seen his hands? They're like this. And you know what they say about men with small hands? You can't trust them. You can't trust them. You can't trust them.
Where are we going here? And then CBS Face the Nation yesterday, Donald Trump saying the Republican establishment has not been good to him and his pledge to support the ultimate GOP candidate may be no longer valid.
They have this lightweight Senator Marco Rubio saying terrible things, just personal terrible things. And I don't think it's fair the way that the establishment is treating Donald Trump, I'll be honest. And I signed a pledge and I will, you know, abide by the pledge unless they default. But as far as I'm concerned, they're defaulting. And I'll tell you what, we're not being treated right. The Republican Party is not treating me right, and they're not treating the people that I represent right.
AJ Delgado, you support Donald Trump. Are you confident he will remain within the party structure through the general election in November?
It's irrelevant to me whether he remains within the party structure. Our only relevancy is whether he wins and the establishment doesn't. That's a non-issue for us.
So you don't really care if he's the Republican nominee ultimately. You just want him to be candidate for the presidency.
I think he will be, but he could do it third party just as well. The establishment needs us. It's not the other way around. And as for Rubio, we're seeing that. He's having a complete mental breakdown. This is a man who's my senator and sadly cannot even carry and won't carry his own state on March 15th. How the heck is that going to be the nominee when you can't carry your own state? He's been revealed for the donor puppet and amnesty pusher that he is, a flip-flopper who wants to sell us out for cheap immigrant labor. And by the way, when Matt mentions free markets as that being some tenet of Rubio supporters, you might want to look into if Rubio's so pro-free markets, why he votes for sugar subsidies. It has something to do with his donors called the Fanjuls. This man's a puppet. He should be nowhere near the presidency.
A donor puppet. Matt Lewis, where do you see the Trump candidacy as having come from? I mean, many people laughed last summer when he rode that escalator and made his announcement, but here we are now. You've been thinking and writing about what built the superstructure for that.
Right. Well, first I want to say I do want to push back a little bit at this, the notion that it's like Donald Trump versus the establishment. Ted Cruz, who I think is a great mainstream conservative, is not the establishment. Is a Tea Party guy. He's running against Donald Trump. So I think it's sort of a bogus notion. Anyway, I'll move on. Look, I think that the phenomenon that created Donald Trump, you know, they say success has many fathers. Well, I think Donald Trump has, you know, there's no one factor that led to him. And I do think that there's a negative narrative that some liberals are trying to advance that Republicans are getting what they deserved. As somebody who just wrote this book about the dumbing down of conservatism, I'm certainly not absolving the Republicans of their sins, partially creating him. But I also think, It's a product of Barack Obama's presidency, the executive orders and the sort of the lawlessness, the politically correct, political correctness run amok that a lot of Americans are upset with. I think it's the economy, too. And we see populist movements from Andrew Jackson to George Wallace to Ross Perot and Pat Buchanan. These things pop up when people are economically insecure and when they fear, when they're afraid of things. And right now you have ISIS beheading Christians in the Middle East. And lastly, I would say that I think that Donald Trump is a product of changing technology and changing cultural mores. You can't imagine Trump really pulling this off in an era before 24/7 cable news. You can't imagine him pulling this off in an era before Twitter. And I can't imagine him pulling this off in a time when we sort of when we had virtues and values like wisdom and prudence. I think Donald Trump is partially a product of cultural degradation brought on by the left, ironically, where he can say horrible, vulgar things, and even conservatives applaud him for it.
But I'm reading from your own work, and you've gone pretty hard after what's happened within your conservative ranks as well. I mean, that's primarily the point of Too Dumb to Fail, as I'm reading here. Am I missing something? Am I wrong?
Right. Well, look, I think that there's no doubt that there's been a dumbing down of conservatism. And I saw this happening in 2010 when you had people like Christine O'Donnell and Sharon Angle who were running for Senate. And then Sarah Palin, who I think really went rogue and became radicalized. And they started talking about this populist pandering, playing the victim card. Woe is me. This establishment's keeping us down. That's not conservatism. Conservatism is about rugged individualism. It's not about playing the victim. It's about finding a way. We live in a great country, living the American dream. And it was also about identity politics, which is something that really had come from the left. And I think it's really unfortunate. And I think, frankly, Donald Trump is tapping into this. You can blame modern conservatism for this, which is identity politics. He's playing a white identity politics game, basically saying it's tribalism. If you're on our team, if you're on our side, in other words, if you're a white working class American, you have to vote for us because it's us against them. I'm much more comfortable with right versus left or right versus wrong than I am with the us versus them phenomenon that Trump is now espousing.
And Donald Trump willing to go right out there on the edge in that realm. There was this thing over the weekend. He was on NBC's Meet the Press, and host Chuck Todd asked him about a Mussolini quote, the fascist leader of Italy, back in, that he had retweeted. He was kind of set up for it. The quote was, "It's better to live one day as a lion than 100 years as a sheep." It was posted on a parody Twitter account that the website Gawker has taken credit for creating. And Trump said, told Chuck Todd he wasn't aware that it was a Mussolini quote, but it wasn't exactly racing away from that.
It's okay to know it's Mussolini. Look, Mussolini was Mussolini. It's okay to know. It's a very good quote. It's a very interesting quote. And I know it. I saw it. I saw what, and I know who said it, but what difference does it make whether it's Mussolini or somebody else? It's certainly a very interesting quote.
Well,
that's probably why
Mussolini
I have, between Facebook
fascist.
And Twitter, 14 million people,
do you
and
want
other
to be
people don't.
You want
it's
to be
a very interesting quote, and people can talk about it.
You want to be associated with a fascist?
No, I want to be associated with interesting quotes.
Donald Trump will go where very few other politicians will go, and you hear him doing it. Right there, A.J. Delgado, Matt Lewis, please stand by. With us right now from Salisbury, Massachusetts, Frank Schaefer is author of Crazy for God, son of prominent evangelical conservative Christians. Francis and Edith Schaefer founded La Brie, evangelical Christian organization, left the GOP in the 80s, writes for Petheos.com now. At a recent column there, an open letter to the Republican establishment leadership, where he said Donald Trump did not come out of nowhere. He said William Buckley and his old friend Jack Kemp would be spinning. Frank Schaefer, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, this is great. Thanks for having me on.
So what is the lineage that you see to the Trump candidacy? He presents himself really as his own guy speaking to the problems right now.
Well, back in the day, you know, when I was a religious right activist in the pro-life movement and met with people like Jack Kemp regularly, actually stayed in his house and was a good friend of Bill Buckley's, and he used to come to our house for tea and so forth. Before I got out of the movement, when it turned so ugly and negative, I guess with the gay bashing after I had been in thinking we were saving babies, and it turned out we were with a bunch of people who just were starting what I began to regard as hate groups. So when I think of Jack Kemp or Bill Buckley, who were friends of mine, you could disagree with their policies. You could say, look, I don't believe in trickle-down economics or whatever it might be. But nobody mistook them for off-the-wall ideologues. These were normal politicians of the right. They were honorable men, and they were not to be confused with what's going on now. When I look at the phenomena of Donald Trump, I think what I'm seeing is a mirror that has been held up to the Republican Party after 7 years of obstruction of our first black president, which has been unconscionable, to the point of wanting to shut down our government, to the point of right now not even wanting to consider his nominee to the Supreme Court. These are the actions of a party that has dedicated itself to essentially trying to carry out by whatever means possible that Mitchell quote at the beginning of his presidency that says our job now is to limit him to a one-term president.
But Frank, they are turning their backs as hard as they possibly can on Donald Trump. They're freaking out at the idea that he might be the candidate, so they're hardly endorsing this guy.
Yeah, they're freaking out for the same reason that we all freak out when we have to admit that we have a child abuser in our family, or when we have to admit that our dad just embezzled all the money from the school lunch fund. Listen, the Republicans are freaking out of shame. They have turned into a racist party of reaction. They have become so ugly that, of course, a Donald Trump or whoever else would it be would come forth. We are now trained on the right, those who were on the right, to react to ugly language and lies. Lies like the birther lies that Trump was part of. Lies saying that Barack Obama is a Muslim, et cetera, et cetera. Lies that even misread the economic upturn we've had under his leadership in spite of the obstruction. So, you know, what I write about in my columns on HuffPost and Passios and other places, or in this new little book of mine, Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God, is essentially trying to present an alternative that says, look, there is a view of spirituality, there is a view of life, of Christianity, of love, that trumps, not to use a pun here, all these ideas of division between humans and races and this ugliness that has crept in.
Let me go to Brian in Austin, Texas. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
Mm-hmm. What do you see?
Well, I think, as a Democrat in Austin, that the only way that we're going to be able to prevent Trump from being a head of the GOP would actually be to have one of the two, either Cruz or Rubio, drop out so they can consolidate their support and make one of them strong enough to take Trump off the lead there. I mean, his foreign policy is a joke. I mean, look at Mexico. Look at even, you know, our biggest ally in Europe is denouncing him. We've already, you know, drawn the ire of Ireland. So, I mean, where is he going with this?
Brian, I appreciate your call. Matt Lewis, do you see either Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio stepping aside, maybe this week, to try and consolidate and oppose?
No, and actually, I used to agree with your caller strategically. I think it's now a mistake. I've advocated looking to what the Whigs did in 1836, believe it or not, running against Van Buren.
Tell us, what's that?
So this would be basically...
We lost track of that.
I know this is a crazy theory that's born out of desperation. But basically, the idea would be Rubio should encourage all of his supporters to vote for Ted Cruz in Texas. And then Cruz should encourage all of his supporters to vote for Rubio in Florida.
Oh, boy.
And they should all encourage everybody to vote for John Kasich in Ohio. The point here would be not to beat Trump, but to deprive him of the 1,237 delegates he would need to clinch the nomination before the convention.
And then do smoke-filled room power grab at the convention in Cleveland? Boy, what are the odds of that triple backflip? I mean, is that's never going to happen. Are you conceding that he's going to be the Republican nominee with that kind of desperate strategy idea?
It's a desperate strategy, and I think he's on pace right now to be the nominee. And look, I guess my point would be, I used to think that would be smart for the candidates to drop out and to sort of consolidate or coalesce around one person. I now think that would actually be counterproductive. I say, you know, let Cruz win Texas, hope that Rubio can win Florida, and hope that Kasich can win Ohio. That's the best strategy.
We heard Mark Sanford worrying about down-ballot implications if Trump is the nominee. What about that? Control of the Congress and the Republican Party itself, Matt? What do you see coming in that scenario?
Well, look, I think I'm with Mark Sanford in the argument that I think it's unpredictable how Trump does in the short term. I think it's possible that he could win the presidency. It's within the realm of possibility, and that he could beat Hillary, and that he could help Republicans in places like Ohio and, you know, Pennsylvania, where there are contested Senate races right now by turning out disaffected, angry, working class white voters. My real concern is the long term branding and redefining of the Republican Party and the conservative movement. And there, I think something I should have talked about earlier, but I just want to sort of bring this up again. I think the race thing is the biggest deal. You know, it's not about protectionism and free markets versus tariffs or whatever. I think the real deal breaker, the reason that conservatives, mainstream conservatives, cannot in good conscience support Trump is all about the race stuff. Because this goes back to William F.
Be
Buckley.
Be specific about what you mean there.
Well, okay, the fact that he fails to disavow David Duke and the KKK.
But he has now.
Wrong.
He says he
That's
has.
A lie. That's a lie.
Three or four times yesterday he failed to do it on CNN.
Matt, okay. That's a lie. He did
now
so
he
in
has.
August.
Lie. That's the truth.
I'm sorry. No. In August, he specifically said, I do not want David Duke's endorsement. 3 days before Jake Tapper asked him, 2 days, he said, I disavow it. Quote. He said it again, and you're saying he hasn't said it?
He failed to disavow that. And look, this is a pattern with Donald Trump, though. He says crazy things, and he walks it back later.
Why are so many African Americans supporting him? I don't hear much for Rubio. Because he's talking about bringing back jobs, about stopping illegal immigration. He's actually talking about policies and doing things that will actually help
African-Americans.
That's why that caller earlier is behind him. And that's why I'm behind him as a minority myself.
Frank Schaefer, do you think Donald Trump could be president come November?
No. What you're going to see is the destruction of a Republican Party. Look, my son served in Afghanistan as a Marine. He stood guard over a girls' school full of Muslim girls, was ready to give his life to defend them.
Frank, we're up against it right there.
This guy wants to not even allow these children to come to America.
Frank Schaefer, A.J. Delgado, Matt Lewis, our thanks to all of you and all our guests this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.